Oh, the Scotty train keeps on rolling. How about the last two instances of players with 13 straight top eight finishes on the PGA Tour? World Golf Hall of Fame member Tom Weisskopf, 1973, the year he won the Open Championship, and now 2025, there goes that man, Scotty Scheffler, in the year he won the Open Championship as well. You know, Lab, there's this thought that all of the players, they got access to TrackMan. You know, they got access to chefs if they want them, fly private at the top of the game. The swings are kind of similar equipment, access to it. Scotty continues to separate himself in this generation of golf.
And look, this is supposed to be the era where it's stronger, bigger, faster. There's supposed to be less of a disparity between the top player and maybe 100 on the FedEx Cup point standings. And Scotty is still doing that. He's still winning at a 23% clip against the very best fields the PGA Tour has to offer. It's just unbelievable. When I think particularly about the BMW Championship, what really comes to mind is how irrepressible he is and how inevitable it seemed, particularly at the halfway point. Like, Robert McIntyre had a 5-shot lead after 36 holes. But who was going to bet Scotty Scheffler, bet against Scotty Scheffler at that point? I think, in particular, head-to-head, the comparison that he had with Robert McIntyre. He knew he was going to be playing with him in the final group on Saturday. If he continued to play well, he's going to be in the final group on Sunday. He's just put so much pressure on the opponent. Yeah. You look at the driving accuracy. I mean, he was third in fairways hit for a guy who's not dinking it out there.
Right.
Particularly when Robert McIntyre was a little bit wayward off the tee, it just put so much pressure on your opponent to feel like you didn't have to force it. This guy, Scheffler, is the best iron player since Tiger Woods. You know he's going to give himself boatloads of chances. He's proved it with his short game in the hands. It wasn't just the chip in on 17, which was obviously remarkable. He had a big save on 6 to sort of maintain that momentum, the advantage that he was poised to take a hole later. And he's much improved inside 15 feet as well. Scotty Scheffler just puts so much pressure on you, and it wears on you throughout the course of the 4 days. And so even though he was trailing, even though Robert McIntyre was putting lights out, there was still a sense of inevitability about what Scotty was going to do. I think, obviously, he proved that on the weekend.
I love that you mentioned Tiger, because in my mind, there's a hesitancy, a reticence to compare Tiger Woods and Scotty Scheffler, because Tiger was Madison Avenue. Not just great, but box office appointment television. Well, I think we're starting to see some comparisons between these two dominant number ones. Let's go back to yesterday, the par 3 17th. As we talk about giving everybody problems, Scotty misses the green on this par 3. Most difficult hole on the property. He's clinging to a one-shot lead. Only 10 players have hit this green. Bob McIntyre just birdied 16. Here comes Scotty. Tough angle. Boom! Water looming, and he hits this shot that makes you want to text your best friend and say, hey, did you just see what Scotty did? And I love the reaction, and it reminded me just a little bit of the 15-time major champ, Tiger Woods, 2012. Memorial, missed the green Sunday on 16, one of the most difficult holes on the property. Tough angle, water looming, and Tiger doing what Tiger does. And that's giving us moments, not just the victory, but things that give us goosebumps, things that make us want to tell our friends. And how about this comparison between Scotty yesterday and Tiger at that memorial? Scotty trailed by 4 going into the final round. Shot 67. 1 by 2. Tiger trailed by 4 going into the final round. Shot 67 and 1 by 2. Both missed greens on a par 3 late, and both gave us moments that made our skin stand up, made the hair stand up on our skin, and made us want to tell our buddies, hey, did you see what he just did? It's not just the victory, it's how they do it. And I think this might be kind of a gateway for Scotty, because he is so relentless. It's fairways, greens, make putts. But that was magic, and that was something that got a lot of people talking.
There's so many comps between Tiger Woods, the plodding nature, the methodical nature of how we do it. Obviously, Tiger had a flair for the dramatic, and he was more demonstrative in his celebrations than Scotty Scheffler certainly is. But there is also, Damon, like a clutchness to them. You know, sometimes it's a chip in. Oftentimes with Scotty Scheffler, it's just hitting the appropriate shot.
Right.
You know, hitting it to 5-10 feet and pouring in the birdie putt. It's more subtle in nature. This actually felt like one of the few times in Scotty Scheffler's career where it punched you in the face. Like, I'm that dude, I seize the moment. Tiger Woods did it, and he always accompanied it with fist pumps and other sort of dramatics. Scotty Scheffler, though, for the first time, that one seemed like it really transcended just PGA Tour golf. It was actually touching sports fans as well.
Not to mention, he didn't have his usual caddy on the bag. Would have been completely understandable, and maybe we saw a little bit of that in Memphis, that his mind was maybe on other places, wasn't as locked in down the stretch in Memphis that he was at the BMW. But to be able to rise to the occasion, whatever the stress, whatever the obstacles, not to mention the game is just darn hard to play, he continues to find goals and reasons to win. There's not an ebb and flow to his intensity and his focus. And he talked about that ability to continue to grind down the stretch, hit the shots required. It's exhausting to be that focused for 72 holes, to be that focused for a month or for a playoffs or for an entire season or for a decade. That's what made Tiger, Brady, Gretzky, Magic, Jordan. They did it for a decade or longer, and that'll be the true test of the Scotty Tiger comp, is if Scotty can continue to answer the bell year after year after year.
I mean, this isn't a run at this point. He's been doing this since 2022.
Yeah,
I talked about this with Rex on the podcast on Sunday night. Like, one of the things that you have to admire about Scotty is that, to your point, he never takes a round off. He never takes a tournament off.
Right.
Like, he never just shows up. He didn't need to show up in Memphis. He had already clinched number one spot. Sepp Straka was not going to pass with Rory McIlroy, not in the field. He didn't even have to play.
Yeah.
Instead, he turns up, finishes one shot out of the playoff. Last week of the BMW Championship, he was already going to be the number one player. He could have been working on some stuff. He could have been looking ahead to East Lake, making sure his body is fresh and sort of prioritizing rest and recovery. No, he is intense every single time he tees it up. That's like Tiger, who is never mailing it in. He's never just working ahead towards something. Each round is something to be savored. Each hole is something to focus and concentrate on. Yes, you're going to have ebbs and flows throughout the course of a tournament round. Scottie Scheffler does it better than anyone, bringing the same amount of intensity to Thursday, the very first tee shot, and the level of preparation that he has all the way to the finish line. I think that's why he's had so much sustained success, particularly look at that top eight streak.
Has to be debilitating to his opponents like Bobby McIntyre. I mean, Scottie just would not let him breathe.
Five-shot lead at the halfway point obviously was not the Sunday that Robert McIntyre was looking for. And look at this, guys, the birdies by round. I mean, putting lights out was Bobby Mack over the first two rounds, building that significant lead. But head-to-head against Scottie Scheffler, when the golf course got more difficult, combined just four birdies on the weekend. And after the final round, he spoke to Kira K. Dixon.
All right, Bob, I know it was a difficult day on the golf course today. What did you find were the biggest challenges?
Yeah, golf ball was going absolute miles for me. I hit a lot of lovely shots later on once I got the control of my game. Par threes, iron shot into, I think it's 13 or 14. And then the iron shot into 17 that I thought was perfect, it was too long. I didn't feel like I controlled distance well. So, yeah, just a poor day.
You talked all week about fighting, and I'm sure that you'll fight back from this. What will be the biggest lessons learned from today?
Yeah, I don't know. Right now, it's, to be honest, absolutely disastrous. I'm not going to be positive standing here. It was, without swearing, it was abysmal is the best word for it. I don't know what else to say. Just absolutely abysmal.
We appreciate you taking the time, and we'll see you next week at East Lake.
Thank you.
Just love the brutal honesty there from Robert McIntyre after that final round 73. So what do you chalk this up to? Just a bad day at the office? Was it the Scotty effect? Was it the crowds? A combination of the three?
All of that. It was the start. Bogey start. Lead's gone through five holes. You had a four-shot lead. I think this is still part of the maturation of a player who is on the world stage. He's won a couple of times now on the PGA Tour in dramatic ways. Dad on the bag in Canada, winning your National Open in Scotland, runner-up at the U.S. Open. This is just another big step. Big picture, great week for Bobby Mack, who ran into an absolute Mack truck who did not let him breathe. I love the fire. I love that he's absolutely bummed out and felt like he got kicked in the teeth and that it's abysmal. He wanted to say something worse than that. I love that fire and disappointment, and I think it will serve him well as he goes back to the drawing board, in a micro way to kind of see where things went wrong. You can't make those mistakes standing next to the best player in the world.
It was obviously an intense cauldron, a very, sort of unappetizing atmosphere. You have the number one player in the world trying to hunt you down. You have a big lead. Everyone sort of expects that you're going to win. You had what apparently turned out to be a pretty hostile crowd.
USA
at Caves Valley. It's sort of a Ryder Cup feel there. I remember Bryson in 2021. That was sort of hostile for him as well. But I sort of chalked this more up to just a really bad day. He'd given no signs that he was going to do this. Hit just one fairway on the opening nine, coupled with Scotty's driving accuracy, certainly put him in a bind. The distance control was way off. You don't know if it was a heat, you don't know if it was adrenaline, wrong clubs, but that just made it so difficult putting from where he was. And the putts dried up. I mean, that was the best two-round putting performance of his career. Obviously, it was going to be unsustainable to do that for the entirety of the week, but he just didn't have sort of the proper distance control on his putts as well, and I think that was most disappointing for Bobby.
Things to work on for him, but loved his expectation level. It was extremely high. He expects better from himself, and I imagine he'll find some things and learn from this Sunday in Maryland.
Yeah, plenty more on the duel at Caves Valley, because we are going to be bringing together a roundtable on Golf Today continues. Some of golf's smartest voices, Golf Today Roundtable, golftoday.com. Senior writer Rex Hoggard and Golf Digest contributor and author Shane Ryan give their thoughts on the biggest storylines to our championship week. Coming up next on Golf Today.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today. Yesterday, it was world number one Scottie Scheffler. Continued to remind everyone why he holds the top spot in golf. Scotty erased a four-shot deficit in five holes to earn the win in the BMW Championship, his fifth PGA Tour title of the year. And the PGA Tour heads to Atlanta in East Lake Golf Club this week for the conclusion of the FedEx Cup playoffs. 30 players will compete in the Tour Championship in a now winner-take-all battle for the FedEx Cup. Live first-round coverage comes your way this Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time.
Let's take a look at the 30 players who made it to East Lake, from Scotty to Akshay, world number one to the 30 in the standings. Akshay aided by that ace on Saturday on 17. But by the way, the winner of this event, as you said, will win the FedEx Cup. So time now to keep the conversation going with another Golf Today roundtable. We welcome in GolfChannel.com senior writer Rex Hoggard and Golf Digest contributor and author Shane Ryan. Great to see you both. Shane, I'll start with you. There's been this reluctance to compare Scotty to Tiger in some circles because Tiger's so transcendent, did it with the je ne sais quoi. Is it time now, with the chip in on 17, with the incredible dominance, to give Scotty his flowers? You got Mahomes and LeBron tweeting about Scotty Scheffler now, Shane.
Yeah, it's funny that LeBron is, because, of course, he had to endure and still has to endure the Jordan debates all the time. And there's part of me with Tiger and Scotty where there's a part that's just not interested in it. It's like, who cares? They're both great in their own way. But I think the comparisons that you can get into, number one, we're witnessing a new kind of greatness that we haven't seen since Tiger. Whether it equals Tiger or not, it doesn't yet. I mean, that's going to be probably impossible because he was such a singular figure. But we are witnessing that kind of generational greatness, and that's so amazing to see. And then you mentioned the chip-in, Damon, and that's the other part where I relate it to Tiger. Scotty now has an aura around him. It's this aura that I think inspires fear in others, and it's an aura built on shots like that, where you look at it and you go, there's only one other guy who constantly seemed to defy the odds with these, oh, look, he's in trouble on, you know, might be competitive again. And not only, so not about going up and down, it's not just making par, he actually holds out for birdie. And that's where I think Scotty gets into the Tiger zone for me, because I start to see, and I know other people do, and I know his opponents do, they start to see this magic around him where you expect anything and he lives up to the hype. So I think that's where he's Tiger-like for me.
Rex, along those same lines, I mean, Scotty's winning at a 23% clip. He's hunting down his opponents on the weekend. He's rising to the moment with these spectacular sorts of chip-ins. You were there. You covered Tiger in his prime. What's different about what Scotty is doing now, sort of 2022 to 2025, than what Tiger Woods did in his prime?
I think it's a smaller sample size, clearly, than what we had with Tiger over the course of two decades. But it feels very similar when you have Scotty Scheffler, and I think you pointed out earlier, coming off the top of the show, that even going into the weekend five shots back, you still felt like that Scotty was going to make a game of it. You didn't feel like Robert McIntyre was going to run away with it, but Scotty was going to chip away. And I will say, the chip in on 17 on Sunday, that was style points that we're not used to seeing from Scottie Scheffler. Yes, he does magical things on the golf course, but that was very much Tiger-esque. There are things, if you want to break down the math, that separate them. I think the one that stands out in my mind is twice in Tiger Woods' career, he had runs of five consecutive seasons with at least four wins. That's twice, two separate times over the course of his career. Scottie's kind of in the middle of one of those right now, but it doesn't feel like he's stopping. It doesn't feel like anything is going to slow him down. You and I talked about it on the podcast on Sunday night. Give me a reason not to be optimistic going forward that this is not a one-off season, that this is the new norm. You can't come up with anything in his game other than the outlier of maybe he gets injured again, and that's probably not a very good prospect.
Well, Shane, this latest victory has come in the playoffs. Memphis, we saw the white whale chase of Tommy Fleetwood. We had Spahn and Rose with that extended playoff. This past week, we had an incredible performance by the world number one. We always talk about what's wrong with the playoffs, starting strokes, not starting strokes, the red, the green, make it make sense. Is it time to say the playoffs have been pretty darn compelling so far?
Yeah, Damon, you know, in my head, and I think everybody should look at it this way, it's important to separate the playoffs from the Tour Championship. And the playoffs have been phenomenal for years now. I think they were a great success when Fincham introduced them. It's a really great way to reduce the field. And this year has been, you know, over the top. It's been amazing. But the Tour Championship, and I, you know, I bring this up all the time. You know those people where they have this hobby horse that they talk about to the point that you're sick of it and you don't want to hang out with them anymore? I fear I'm becoming that with the Tour Championship. But, you know, the staggered strokes was an okay, like, halfway point. Going back to just a 30-man free-for-all, it feels like a retreat. It feels like giving up on the idea of finding a way to crown a real champion and making it unique. I still say, and I know I'm a broken record, do match play. Find a way to do match play. You know, and there are ways to do it where it's not just, oh, we only have one boring match on Sunday. There's ways around it, and we'll get into that in Golf Digest this week. But do match play, because head-to-head is the only way to decide a true champion. I mean, what if, I don't know, what if Goddard goes and wins this week? Does anybody think that is, oh, yeah, he's the tour champion? No, it's got to be match play. You got to have two guys going at it. It's the way sports is supposed to be, and it's the way I think the tour championship should be.
Rex, I know you are very anti-match play in the tour championship, so defend it. Defend the winner-take-all finale that the tour championship now uses.
No, erroneous. That's not what I am at all. I am not anti-match play. That you're completely incorrect. I know for a fact that most of the players, at least the top players, are anti-match play. Because when you have conversations with this or with people who have been in the room when these conversations come up about what should we do with the Tour Championship, it's not the media partners, it's not the sponsors, it's certainly not the fans or the media who are deciding that, no, match play isn't for us or is for us. It's the players. The idea being that all year long, you use 72 holes of stroke play to determine your champions. And now you're going to get to your big finish and you're going to mix it up. I'm not against match play. I love the U.S. Amateur over the weekend. I think it's the players who are against it. And we have seen historically, going back to the World Golf Championship match play, that it's the best Wednesday in golf, but more often than not, it led to one of the worst Sundays in golf.
Rex, in keeping with you for this question, when the PGA Tour announced these sort of mid-season changes to the format of the Tour Championship, one thing they did mention was that the PAC was going to look into the field size for the Tour Championship and trying to figure out whether 30 was the right number or potentially they should reduce it even further. Where do you stand on that? Is 30 the right number, or would you like to see something closer to 15?
I think if you're reading tea leaves right now, go back to what Scottie Scheffler said back in May in the announcement that they were getting rid of starting strokes. His quote was, quote, most difficult tournament to win. That's what they want to create. That's kind of talk for fewer players, because if it's the most difficult tournament to get into to win, I think that's what they're singling for right there. So I would anticipate that's where they're going. To address your previous question, Brian Rolapp, the new CEO, he talked a lot in his introductory press conference about innovation. One of those things would be come up with a different format for the Tour Championship, because to Shane's point, I tend to agree. Getting rid of starting strokes, I think most of us agree, was a good idea because it was just a distraction. However, over the last few years, I would say the FedEx Cup, the Tour Championship, became an important part of the conversation. When we got there, when we talked to players about who would you vote for Player of the Year, there was always someone who was the favorite, but it seems like more often than not in recent years, they would always go back to the idea that, well, that could change this week. The players had made the FedEx Cup important. I think this change, going back to just straight 72 holes of stroke play, will alter that. Because you're right. If there is a player who you don't feel like was the Player of the Year, then it's going to kind of lose some of its steam.
Well, Shane, I asked this question with a bit of hesitancy, considering the great impact that Eastlake and Atlanta and the Tour Championship have had on that city. But much like the NFL that has a Super Bowl in New Orleans one year and then Miami one year and then San Francisco perhaps or New York, should the Tour Championship or at least the season finale or some aspect of the playoffs be moved around to different golf courses and different cities so different fan bases have a chance to kind of have a bite of the apple of the season finale on the PGA Tour?
No, I think I'm a no on that one because I think there is something special about having familiarity with a course. It's probably a big part of the reason why, you know, Augusta, why the Masters is the major with the most prestige, because we know that course so well. We know the holes, we know the closing holes, we know the theaters that are so dramatic at the end. And not comparing Eastlake to Augusta, but I do think that a sense of familiarity works. So when you're at the Tour Championship, you go, oh yeah, gosh, they're going to come down to the 15th hole and the 18th hole, and I know exactly what that's like. I think there's plenty of opportunities for people to see golf around the country. So to me, I think it is better to have it in one place.
Well, great point of keeping the Tour Championship in Atlanta. We'll continue this conversation after the break. Keegan Bradley, should he have 14 clubs or a headset at Bethpage Black or both? Find out next on Golf Today.
Back on Golf Today, continuing our roundtable discussion with Rex Hoggard and Shane Ryan. And Shane, I want to start with you. We've been doing these roundtables together for basically the past 2 months. Let's focus on Keegan Bradley as we have for the past 2 months. Where do you stand now on Captain Keegan? Is the pendulum swinging back towards him not playing? What do you think?
Well, you know, let me hit you. I was sick this past weekend in my fevered state. I had nothing to do but think about the Ryder Cup. And I had this revelation that I think is interesting, where Keegan Bradley, to pick yourself looks a little weird, right? No matter what, even if you deserve it. And now he's got Matt McNeely ahead of him in the standings. So to pick himself, he'd probably have to pick over somebody above him. So there's all this perception stuff. Now, look back to Rome when all the sympathy was with him because of Full Swing, where he got left off the team by Zach Johnson. Everybody said, oh, he got screw-jobbed, all that kind of stuff. Keegan Bradley had all the sympathy in the world. If there was any other captain right now for this Ryder Cup, there is no way that for the second time they would leave Keegan Bradley off. So the revelation that came to me, the epiphany was, the only way Keegan Bradley could not make this team is if Keegan Bradley was the captain and worried about how it would look to pick himself and the pressure it would put on him and the team. And that is a kind of curse from the universe that is like, it's like a biblical Old Testament style curse. Like, we're going to make you captain, and it's the only thing that could prevent you from playing. So that's among the possibilities. And to answer your question, Lav, does he pick himself? Can he pick himself? In theory, yeah. To me, he's like the 12th guy. Like, he deserves to be on the team. But now it's so close with Cam Young and McNeely, even Sam Burns, guys like that, that it becomes, no matter what he does, if he does pick himself, there is going to be this question of, well, now you've got to go out and win to prove yourself. Now there's pressure on your teammates. Now there's pressure on the whole American team, and it becomes a distraction. So I think that, again, it goes back to, this is why you don't make a potential player the captain to begin with. And it's bearing all the fruit that a year ago we thought it might bear.
Yeah, Rex, my thoughts have evolved in this situation. I'm kind of the Rory McIlroy school of thought. You can't do both to the utmost extent and the greatness that is required to focus as a captain. You're going to be a lesser captain if you have to play. You'll be a lesser player if you have to captain. If he does play, should he just put the headset aside and let Webb and those guys make the decisions? Or you think there's a world where he can do both and do both well?
I think in his mind, he will try to do both if he, in fact, picks himself. And I'm going to stick with what I've said all along, although, as I've told Lav on numerous occasions over the last few days, really, I don't have nearly as much bass in my voice. I feel like he is going to pick himself simply because if you look at it statistically, he is one of the top 12 Americans, however you want to break it down. World ranking, strokes gained, total, data golf, whatever metric you want to use, he's among the top 12. But he's certainly in an impossible situation. So it's twofold. Will he and should he? I think he will. Should he? No. Because I agree with you and Rory on the idea that by doing both, you're going to end up trying to do two jobs and not doing very well instead of trying to focus on one and do it really well. I thought Rory did a good job of explaining sort of exactly how it's going to play out if he is a playing captain. You're limiting yourself on Friday and Saturday as far as team pairings. Essentially, Keegan can only play once. What does he do on Sunday? Does he send himself out first? Does he send himself off last. You're putting someone else essentially in charge when you are on the golf course, whether that's Jim Furyk or whoever else of his vice captains. I think it's going to end up being a bad decision, but I think he's almost boxed into a corner, as Shane said.
Shane, if you take Keegan out of the equation, who's the most interesting player this week? It's the final week for players to audition for Keegan Bradley. On the European side, it's the final week of automatic qualifying, which is obviously going to be of utmost importance to a player like Rasmus Højgaard. Who is under the most pressure this week and, in theory, is your most interesting player?
Yeah, I think on the European side, you nailed it. I think Rasmus Højgaard, after playing so well in Denmark, really has the inside lane here. It's been the question of who is Luke Donald's 12th pick going to be. I think he probably secured it in Denmark, you know, not to be anticlimactic here, but I think have a good week at the British Masters would be a big deal. On the U.S. side, I've got it down again to two players, two spots left and four players competing, and it's Keegan, Mav McNeely, Cameron Young, and Sam Burns. And Sam Burns is probably the darkest horse of those. So, you know, again, I don't can't read Keegan's mind, and I don't know what the leadership is thinking. Maybe they already have their guys picked. But I feel like if Cam Young or Mav McNeely especially have a great weekend, they really, really help themselves and should be on the team. And you know Keegan Bradley, if he still has ambitions to make it, really wants to put up a top 10, even a top 5 performance. So those are the guys I'm really looking at with everything to play for.
Rex, conventional wisdom says, well, the Americans should be favored, and whenever you're the home team, you win. But I see some vulnerabilities. None of the top six that are locked in has a winning record in the Ryder Cup. No DJ, Brooks, probably no Spieth. Those three players finished in the top five in 2019 at the PGA Championship at Bethpage Black. Do you see the same vulnerabilities I do? Because I see a lack of experience on the American side and a lack of winning records on the American side, at least so far, halfway through this team being constructed.
I think it's pretty clear that Keegan Bradley is the one that's not sleeping very well at night, as opposed to Luke Donald, who we haven't even mentioned so far. I think Luke Donald is so in control. We know he's a proven commodity. He was a brilliant captain 2 years ago in Rome. That's why he got selected again. He's going to be another brilliant captain. Really, his only concern is which one of the Højgaards you're going to put on the team. Like, that's pretty good when you're essentially just re-racking what you did in Rome, as opposed to Keegan. You're right. I mean, outside of Scottie Scheffler, you've got some serious issues. Not so much, not even. Let's move away from the picks in this moment. Let's just look at the players that are on the team right now. Xander Schauffele, who you would think would be a rock on the American side, didn't qualify for Eastlake. You have a lot of question marks that the other team does not have. Yeah, man, I would not be sleeping well right now if I was Keegan Bradley.
Okay, let's talk a bit about Jon Rahm, who is going to be picked for that European Ryder Cup team, obviously. But over the weekend on LIV, he claimed the individual championship for the second consecutive year, despite not winning a golf tournament in 2025. Is that at all weird or ridiculous to you?
Who should speak here, Ryan?
Shane.
Okay. Yeah. So to me, to me, this is a funny thing. And like the joke in my head is I want to congratulate LIV. They've aspired to be like the PGA Tour. And they've accomplished it here by failing to have a definitive winner and having controversy with their season-ending tournament. I happened to look at the LIV leaderboard on their website yesterday, and there's Joaquin Niemann in second place with five yellow number ones for winning five different trophies. But Rahm is the top guy. But it goes into the problem with golf, right? With a season-ending championship in golf, you're going to run into these same issues no matter what kind of league you have, where if you want to maintain some kind of drama in the finale, if you want to have it feel like a real championship, there has to be a certain amount of volatility. And if there's a certain amount of volatility, the guy with five championships can't have already clinched the title. And the PGA Tour had the same thing happen. I think very early on, Vijay Singh clinched the tour championship before it even happened because he was so successful 1 year. Can't remember what year, but they had to adjust. And then, you know, LIV has already adjusted. But it ends with someone like Rahm winning, and you're going, well, is that really deserved? Does that really make sense? I do have a solution, guys. You're never going to believe what I think they can do. It's a little something called match play. But no, really, yeah, it does look a little bit silly, but they're running into the same problems the PGA Tour has for the same exact reasons.
I want to talk about the European Ryder Cup team, Rex. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Luke Donald sleeping well at night. Harry Hall, we're going to get him a little bit in the next segment. This man hasn't missed a cut since the Players' Championship. Five top 20s in his last seven starts on his way to Eastlake, Rex. And yet he said he wasn't fit for a shirt or a hat. I love the hat that he wears, kind of an old throwback to Hogan and the late, great Payne Stewart. It says he hasn't had a phone call with Luke Donald. The thought was that the old boy network's on the American side. Were you a little bit surprised that Harry hasn't even gotten a phone call or a text message?
I'm a little shocked considering how well he's putted this year on the PGA Tour. No one, not named Scottie Scheffler, not named Xander Schauffele, not named Rory McIlroy, have putted better than Harry Hall. And last I checked, that's kind of a big deal at a Ryder Cup. Now, granted, he's never played in one, and we all know we've talked round and round about the idea that Bethpage is going to be difficult. But yeah, I'm surprised. Again, I think in Luke's mind, probably comes down to either the Højgaards or maybe Marco Pinge, who had a great weekend last week in Denmark.
A fascinating time in the game. Thank you, Shane. Thank you, Rex. Now, folks, if you're in the market for a podcast, you want to hear folks like Rex and Lav, you can check out the Golf Channel podcast. Fun listening. If you miss any of Golf Today, you can find our best interviews on the Golf Today podcast. And be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page as well. Don't forget College Golf Talk, too. Those top six are now locked in. Scotty, JJ, Xander, Russ, as they call him, Harris English, and big bad Bryson DeChambeau rounding out the top six. So six captain's picks to come for Keegan Bradley, including potentially himself.
It's very interesting that now we certainly have more clarity, right? Like, we know six. I also think now we have even more confusion. I think you could probably make the case that there's safely five guys that you would feel very comfortable either warrant picks, should be picked, or will get picked. Those players to me are Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, Ben Griffin, who had another great finish at the BMW Championship, Patrick Cantlay, based largely on his Ryder Cup record,
yeah,
and Cam Young, who's been one of the best players over the past month. At that point, that to me is the clarity. The confusion reigns with who you could potentially put in that 12th spot.
Bradley, Goddard,
is it
Novak.
Bradley, is it Goddard? Is it Maverick McNeely, who had a third place finish at the BMW? Is it, I think those three players certainly come to mind. I would put Sam Burns in that conversation. We had Shane Ryan, who wrote the book on the Ryder Cup, literally. He called Sam Burns sort of the darkest of the dark horse. To me, he actually makes the most sense to have that 12th spot over Keegan Bradley. You look at what he's done this summer, nearly won in Canada, 54-hole leader at the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
He's the best putter on the PGA Tour this year. But I think most importantly, when you look at sort of this new-look U.S. Ryder Cup team, last year at the President's Cup, he went 3-0 in team play. Who are his two partners? Colin Morikawa and Patrick Cantlay.
Yeah.
If you're Keegan Bradley, you're looking at potential pairings who have had success. There's not many on that U.S. Ryder Cup team. Sam Burns, you can really plug and play a lot easier than some of these other players.
16th in the standings, but also Scottie Scheffler's best friend on the PGA Tour. I dug into some of the numbers, though, and I was surprised. We talk about the top six, and you think, well, there's got to be some winning experience among those top six in the U.S. Ryder Cup standings. But there's not. Not a single American in that top six has a winning record in the Ryder Cup. I'll say again, none of them. Not Scotty, of course, JJ debut, not Xander, Russ debut, not Harris, and not Bryson. Look at the Europeans. Not just experience and loads of it. Winning experience, Rory, Bobby Mack, Fleetwood, Rose, Hatton, all winning records, and just Shane doesn't, and he's just barely 2-3-1. That made me scratch my head, Ryan Lavner. Wait a second. Road game for the Europeans. Not going to have a chance. Americans at home, New York, loud. Look at that difference in experience and winning experience among the top six, which to me compels Keegan Bradley to take some dogs who have some experience and winning experience in the Ryder Cup.
My counter argument to that graphic, and it certainly stands out. I mean, win-loss records.
I worked hard on that graphic, Lav.
They certainly are what they are. However, all of those players on the U.S. team, by and large, are within a certain age bracket. Right?
Okay.
They probably jumped on the PGA Tour somewhere around 2018 to 2020. In that time span, they've had just one home Ryder Cup. And if we've learned anything since Madonna, it is how impactful and how significant it is to have a home Ryder Cup. You look at rookies and first-timers. Do you want more experience or do you sort of want a youthful injection? Rookies have fared quite well. You look at over the last three Ryder Cups at home for Americans, they've been 28, 12, and 1.
And that includes Scotty at Whistling Straits.
That includes Scotty at Whistling Straits.
Yep.
the U.S. rookies have not had a losing record in a Ryder Cup since 2020. There's always this perception about, oh, how are guys going to handle the cauldron? More times than not, you actually want that inexperience. You want guys who don't know what they don't know. Send them out there. Let them sort of flourish in that atmosphere, particularly at home. History has proven it's actually more beneficial to have those players than maybe the seasoned veterans who have a little bit of scar tissue.
Isn't there a live component to this as well? This will be the first Ryder Cup that doesn't most likely won't have Dustin Johnson or Brooks Koepka since 2014. You know, DJ was the MVP of that American team in Wisconsin at Whistling Straits.
To be fair, everyone was good that week. It was 19.
Everyone was good, but DJ was DJ. And he's not the same player now. He's older, doesn't have the major championship record that he had 4 years ago. But that's in the back of my mind, that to have a guy like Brooks, who has a major at Bethpage, not to mention his confrontational style, hits the ball a mile, DJ at the height of his power, the preeminent driver of the golf ball alongside the likes of Rory McIlroy. Those are things I'm going to be watching come September, should the Americans find themselves in a spot of bother, in a bit of trouble, lacking the kind of institutional Ryder Cup knowledge that some of those great players, future Hall of Famers, have.
I think it is going to be interesting because Scottie Scheffler is obviously going to go all five matches as it relates to the Americans. They can't afford to not have him go out. But you look at some of the other players who they're going to be dependent on. Xander Schauffele didn't make the Tour Championship for the first time since he has had a PGA Tour card. Who else is going to stand up? Is it going to be Justin Thomas, who's sort of the heartbeat of that U.S. Ryder Cup team? Is it going to be a soft-spoken player like a Russell Henley, who paired quite nicely with Scottie Scheffler last year in Montreal for the President's Cup? It would be someone sort of unexpected. J.J. Spahn looked awfully good sparring with Justin Rose.
Yeah, he did.
In Memphis, could it be Harris English?
Yeah.
Who's one of those players who, yes, he's a little bit long in the tooth potentially on that U.S. Ryder Cup team, but he at least has been there before. And you look at his major championship record this year, he has not been fazed by the big stage. I see what you're saying, that they don't have those guys who have been on 4, 5, 6 Ryder Cup teams. I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing, and history indicates that a little bit of a turnover, a new age Ryder Cup team for the U.S. isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Let's take a closer look at Team Europe trying to win on foreign soil. Luke Donald, of course, back for a second consecutive captaincy, and their top six will be locked in after the Betfred British Masters next week. So there you see the top six. Lowry just bumping Sepp Straka down. Sepp, of course, a part of the team in Rome. You have to think you'll see him. Rasmus, his twin brother, Nikolai, played in Rome, but I see Rasmus is the low Hoygaard, as it were. Ludvig Åberg, you know you're going to see him there. Victor Hovland has Ryder Cup experience. Matt Wallace has never played on a team, and Matt Fitzpatrick rounding out the top 12, as it were. What do you see here, strengths and weaknesses?
I see a team that is going to bear a striking resemblance to the one that romped in Rome in 2023.
Yeah.
If anything, they're just going to be swapping out a Hoegaard with Rasmus Hoegaard, who actually controls his own destiny this week at the British Masters. If he finishes better than a two-way tie for 29th, that will get him automatically inside the top six. And at that point, you have a team that has 11 of the 12 players from 2023. There's no way that Luke Donald is going to be leaving off a Matt Fitzpatrick, a Shane Lowry.
John Rahm.
A John Rahm is obviously going to be picked. And so all of a sudden, you have Luke Donald saying, you have this core, you have this nucleus, you have players that you can depend on going into a hostile territory.
Yeah.
That's why I think, Damon, when we had that Harry Hall discussion and how he's been viewed sort of as an outsider, if you're Luke Donald and you're bringing them into this cauldron, you want guys you can trust. You want guys who have been there and done that.
Yeah.
Rasmus Hoegaard might not have the credentials of a Rory McIlroy or John Rahm or a Tyrrell Hatton or a Justin Rose. However, he has won 5 times on the DP World Tour. He did beat Rory McIlroy head-to-head last year at the Irish Open. That stands for something, particularly when you're going into a hostile atmosphere like this.
The last time Rory McIlroy competed in a Ryder Cup on American soil, he left in tears on that Sunday, had contributed nothing until that Sunday when he beat Xander Schauffele in singles and said the Ryder Cup means so much to him. And he talked about it. Post-Masters, his biggest events were the Open at Royal Portrush, the race to Dubai, and the Ryder Cup. I mean, I think his eyes will be wide open. He will be the heartbeat of that team, but you also have Justin Rose who was so important in Rome. You have Shane Lowry, who's been there. You have Tommy Fleetwood, who, you know, in Paris went, what, 4-1, mm-hmm. Undefeated with Francesco Molinari.
Ludwig's playing better of late.
He is. This team looks very dangerous. You're talking about guys who have had success on the PGA Tour and winning, I mean, McIntyre, Rose, Hatton's a PGA Tour winner. Lowry, obviously, a major champ. And even in that bottom row, Ludwig, Victor Hovland, a FedEx Cup champ. Matt Fitzpatrick, a major champ. Guys who have performed in the United States, they look dangerous. New York is an international city as much as any in the world. Should things go sideways early, don't tell me there won't be some Irish in New York going crazy for Team Europe.
What that graphic shows me, Damon, is that the talent gap is shrinking. If not, you're having equal teams between the U.S. and Europe, probably for the first time in the history of the Ryder Cup. This is going to be a great litmus test at Bethpage Black of just how much home course advantage truly matters. You look at the last five Ryder Cups, all of which have been won by the home team, but by an average margin of victory of 6.6 points. They have been blowouts. You look at that roster for the European Ryder Cup team, it's unfathomable that that team could get blown out unless the home course advantage is so stark, it's so dramatic, and it's so significant as it has been. Luke Donald's got to hope that those guys play incredibly well and also get off to a hot start in terms of potentially that hostile crowd against
them. I don't want to be hyperbolic, but New York, Long Island, the People's Golf Course, this could potentially be the greatest Ryder Cup ever. And I cannot wait until September. Let's welcome in Golf Digest senior writer now, Joel Beal. It's great to see you. We were talking a little bit ago to Rex and Shane, Ryan, about this transcendent factor that maybe Scotty is starting to show with the likes of Patrick Mahomes and LeBron James tweeting about Scottie Scheffler. Are we there yet? Or maybe was yesterday the first of what could be a transcendent career?
I think we've been there for some time. You know, yesterday, I think what really struck to me is at no point did the issue feel in doubt, which is saying something given he started with the four-shot deficit. He just continues to do what we expect him to do, which is you're not supposed to do that in golf. The game is too hard. The talent pool is too deep. I think the word we keep defaulting to when it comes to Scheffler is inevitable. It sounds cliche and obviously not true, but we just saw it last week in Memphis, right? He fell a shot out of a playoff. Yet even that seems to kind of support the sentiment that when he doesn't win, we're shocked. To have this type of sustained consistency, I mean, convention says it's going to stop, right? We're at two straight years at this level, really four if you kind of hone in just on his ball striking. I mean, to me, the only real takeaway is, you know, just keep this man away from the kitchen come holidays. That's really, you know, I'm all for shared responsibilities in the household, but given the only thing that stopped him is coming on the business end of making ravioli, maybe just kind of focus on baby duty come Christmas feast.
Joel, the player that Scottie Scheffler was sparring with over the weekend was Bob McIntyre, who complained, certainly sounded like he was getting an earful from the fans at Caves Valley. Are you okay with that, or do you think the tour should have done a better job policing it as they do in regular PGA Tour events?
No, I think the tour actually does a solid job on policing and keeping players safe. To me, it wasn't just yesterday. It was Saturday. He had plenty of chance in his face. I think it's more just a nod to the storm that's on the horizon when we're talking about the Ryder Cup. You know, I don't think we as a sport are ready for how bad the scenes could be at Bethpage. I think both of you fellas were at the 2019 PGA where fans were chanting DJ and Brooks Koepka's face after he made a mess of the 14th hole. You know, fan behavior certainly hasn't gotten better in the 6 years since. You know, I know there's a huge price point with the tickets, but I think you're just going to have a lot of Wall Street bros who will be liquored up, who don't know anything about golf. You had the Saudi connections, you know, in the shadow of the World Trade Center for two of Europeans' best players. I mean, gosh, it was just last summer where Rory was getting USA chance in his face down the stretch at Pinehurst. So I hate to sound so alarmist, but I worry this great event has a chance to go sideways in a real ugly way. And what we kind of saw at this past weekend at the BMW, I think is just a harbinger of what's to come.
Joel, you're one of the great writers that we have who covers this game because you don't just do the X's and O's, the box scores, the wins and losses. You do look for the shades of gray. How much are you looking forward to kind of telling some of those stories? Will you be writing about what happens outside the ropes, not just focused on Keegan versus Luke, Rory, versus Scotty, but also some of those things that you're talking about that could be a potential riding point for you.
Yeah, you know, especially when it comes to the Ryder Cup, I think the fans are just as much of character in the proceedings as the players are. It's the one time our sport becomes communal. I think that's why you saw such an uproar over those ticket prices. You know, you're kind of pricing the very people out that make this event so special at the People's Country Club of all places. Obviously there'll be plenty of stories to tell inside the ropes, but my worry is, but I think the real stories are going to lie in the scenes outside the ropes that week.
Joel, as it relates to Keegan Bradley, it seems like his list of headaches is only growing. Now with the final week for players to audition, even for Keegan Bradley to audition for his own team, where do you sort of sit on what Keegan should do with those six captain's picks?
I think two of them are essentially locks. That would have been Ben Griffin and Justin Thomas. You could maybe go a third with Patrick Cantlay, given his past results with the team. I mean, him and Xander, gosh, they're like Uncrustables, you know, something so good that somehow doesn't get old. To me, that it starts getting interesting, though, after that. Colin Morikawa should be there. You look at his results since the Players. He's just not been the same guy he was in those first 3 months of the year. I would say Morikawa still has probably a good spot on number four. At that point, you're looking at Sam Burns, Matt McNeely, Cam Young, and then, as you mentioned, Keegan for those last two spots. Burns and McNeely really helped their cases last week. Young's been making a push for the past month. Although I think McNeely and Young, you know, Lab, I heard beforehand you talked sometimes maybe the inexperience, it gets played up a little bit too much. If anything, it could be an asset. I also think with already three rookies on the team, I don't know if a fourth will go that way with McNeely or Young. So I think one of those guys will need to do something special this week. And then, man, Keegan, I mean, let's remember what's on the line. This is a rare chance to do something that cements a legacy, playing and captaining a Ryder Cup at your college course at an event you've desperately loved but haven't been able to play for the past decade. That's going to be really hard to pass up. And yet his play since that Travelers Championship win has really put the issue in doubt. I would be, you know, I think heading into the playoffs, there was a lot of conviction that Keegan would pick himself. I think the past month really raises that question. If he finishes in the bottom 20 of the at East Lake and those guys make a jump, that's going to be tough optics to defend that call. So I think really Keegan's, and all due respect to the tour champion itself, Keegan's performance, I think, it is one of the main storylines this week.
That said, Joel, could it go sideways for him if he decides to pick himself and doesn't play well on that Friday and the Americans fall behind? Listen, it's a volatile crowd. I was there in 02, Sergio Garcia, you got folks saying, Tiger, I'm the Tiger of 2x4s. I mean, you heard every thought. No thought went left unsaid at Bethpage during that U.S. Open in 02, and that's continued throughout the history of that great course when the PGA Tour or a big PGA of America event comes. Is there a chance that he becomes a target instead of a hero?
I mean, certainly that chance does present itself, and you guys have covered enough golf tournaments to know that because of the silence, even at a Ryder Cup, all it takes is just one voice to sound like nails on a chalkboard. That being said, say what you want about the Long Island crowd. They're very protective of their own. And unless things go really sideways, I still think they're going to have Keegan's back if he does choose to put himself in that position. To me, I think the bigger worry would just be if the U.S. team as a whole goes south. I think that's just as much as, you know, what's going to be directed at the European players. Those are kind of my two worry points heading into the week.
Joel, as it relates to this week and the Tour Championship, the FedEx Cup finale for the top 30 players at East Lake, we've been told that this is sort of a bridge year with this winner-take-all format. Moving forward, how much say do you think that PGA Tour players should have in determining the format for the Tour Championship, or should that be coming from on high, CEO Brian Rolapp and the like?
No, it's a good question. I think the players, I mean, obviously they're the ones whose livelihood's on the line. Yeah, I think they've had enough input over the past 4 years. To me, this decision belongs with the new commissioner, but also the fans, because really since its inception, we've constantly argued about the FedEx Cup and as an extension, the Tour Championship doesn't matter. And if you're arguing why something matters, it probably doesn't. So you need to give the people some incentive to watch. And that these players are getting lots and lots of money has proven not to be the pool. So to me, it comes down to two things. I think you need a change of venue and a change of format. And I understand all the great things East Lake has done in the surrounding community. I would just count it that there are hundreds of communities across this country where golf can make an impact and is making an impact. And I think the tour has a chance to kind of use the same blueprint that's worked so well in Atlanta in different spots. Regarding East Lake as a course in itself, fine course. It's obviously the restoration really made it pop, but I don't think it's in that same type of category of courses where you tune in just to see the course. And with only 30 players, you kind of want the course to be just as much character in the proceedings as the players. And then on the format front, listen, it's been said over and over, and I understand the aversion from both the tour standpoint and the network standpoint, but match play, you know, with the WGC event gone, it's just the perfect spot to resurrect it. You can even go to the point where maybe stroke play is for the first couple of days to weed it down in the top 8 or 16, but this event is supposed to be for the golf sickos. If you're still watching at this point of the season, you love golf. And right now this event is trying to cater to everyone. And if you do that, you're really catering to no one. I think going to match play gives it that playoff feel and really appeals to the true golf fan at home.
That said, Joel, are there aspects that you've enjoyed, the 70-50-30 as opposed to 120? Everybody makes the playoffs. Did Memphis pop for you and then Maryland? Have the playoffs been compelling in a year that we've seen some wonderful storylines?
Yeah, I think in themselves, the playoffs have been strong. You mentioned that the 70-50-30. For all the changes the tour has made since 2022, I think the making the playoffs down to 70 really brings some stake into the regular season. And there should be consequence. You look at the names that kind of just missed the cutoff. You know, there were a couple big names, but they were also guys who didn't really deserve to make the playoffs. And with the top 50 as well, I do like that we always struggle to figure out, you know, what does this week-to-week thing, that so many of these tournaments look the same as the one before it. So I do like the number standpoint. It's just, and after that last major, it really is hard to kind of find meaning and consequence. And again, the golf itself has been entertaining, but I think, I think a match play format helps bring a little bit more consequence and merit to the playoffs at hand.
Well, Joel, plenty to talk about this week. You have a great piece on Scottie Scheffler up on golfdigest.com. Thanks, as always, for joining us. Look forward to talking to you down the road.
Thanks, guys.